Now we're going to hear from Tim Strom. Tim is an Arena Publications editor and is finishing up a postdoctoral research fellowship looking at the extinction crisis. His next book, Cybernetic Capitalism, was commissioned by Verso and will hopefully be out mid next year. Thanks, Tim.
I'm going to start with a similar kind of move, actually, in going back historically and saying, oh, things, this has been in train for a long time. It's not just since 2022. I'll start what I want to say with in my favorite place to start a lot of these discussions, which is at a very specific moment. Back in 1945, there were three moments, a kind of triptych, which have the names Trinity, Hiroshima, Nagasaki. Those three bombs and the opening of nuclear power and what that entailed, I think, is a really threshold moment that underpins a lot of what we're seeing right now. AI has the same genesis as the atomic projects. They were bound together from the beginning in weird kinds of ways. It's just to get to where we are now has a longer chain reaction than the splitting of atoms. Back then, the US Secretary of War, Stinton was his name, he said very accurately shortly after the Trinity test, he said, this test is not just reveals not just about the bombs and new weapons, but it actually reveals a new relationship humanity has with the universe. And I think he was absolutely right. The Secretary of War nailed it. And what they did by dropping those three bombs, they were tests. They didn't know what would happen exactly. Would they destroy the entire planet? That was actually on the cards. How would it work? In effect, what they did by doing that was turned the world into a kind of laboratory. And a laboratory where you can have these unhinged experiments that are just thrown out into the world. Laboratory is an interesting word. It comes from the Latin. Ultimately, it shares the same root origin as the word labor. So then I guess the question is, okay, what kind of labor happens in a laboratory when you turn the whole world into a kind of a lab? And the answer is a bit of a typical Arena one for anyone familiar with that publication. It's a kind of intellectual labor. And the kind of intellectual labor that can piece something together like an atomic bomb or the actual machinery that can create artificial intelligence to actually bring that into being and make it a material force in the world, it requires a huge amount of highly abstract intellectual labor. And if you trace the origins of that, that labor did not emerge from the history of labor larger or the history of craft or any of the other traditions of how things came into being. It came specifically from the military-industrial complex, and it was very rapidly turned directly against craft and labor more largely. And I think it's curious to note that the radical tradition hasn't actually got a good grasp of that in a lot of ways. Whereas on the other side, the centers of power, they were very keen observers of that. I just quoted the US Secretary of War from World War II. Also back in 1945, Vannevar Bush is another great, great character. He was the first scientific advisor to any US president, and he wrote this incredible paper, which then became a book called Science, the Endless Frontier in 1945, taking that lovely colonial metaphor. And in it, he argued that the military-industrial complex, for it to be powerful in the world, it needs huge amounts of highly trained intellectuals to do research. Through that basic research is the key to victory in war, national defense, industrial production increasing, consumer society increasing. He nailed it. The report is amazing, actually, in terms of its foresight. And reading, going back to it, you're like, wow, they had a very strong grasp of the key role that intellectuals played in this process, which is a different kind of labor from what we think about often when we think labor. As I said, back in 1945, you had those three explosions. A completely different relationship with the universe began opening up, but it took quite a while for the broader chain reaction of that to get to where we are now, three human generations later, more or less. And a lot has shifted. Back in 1945, when all those bombs were first dropped, computer was not a machine that you would type on. It was a job, actually. The job computer came about 500 years ago with the first surveys, like scientific surveys of land, in order to enclose the commons. And a computer's job was to go and do the calculations required to figure out the area of different parts of the commons that were being carved up. And then later they would do other kind of calculative work. It was a profession. And it wasn't until the creation of computing machines that that job went completely obsolete, and it ended up being replaced. Now the term, it's kind of, there's a dark irony in the word computer, because itself is a case of a job being obsolete and outsourced to a machine. And then if we jump forward to today's world, a key thing is this looming specter of a kind of jobs apocalypse, which has already been raised. Will this be a thing? I tend to agree with Chris in that I suspect, even though there will be very sharp job losses in a number of key areas, undoubtedly, and there already are, and this will deepen as the years go by, most likely, but a big part of it will also be a sort of a reconstitution of what is work, and a lot of it will be a kind of bullshitification, if that could be a word, to sort of draw on Graeber's concept of bullshit jobs. Like, so many jobs, and not even just work, but so much of life is now pulled through these sort of systems that, have the effect of undermining and hollowing out, you know, caregiving or education or thinking or journalism or any of those things that are probably, on a bit of reflection, probably fairly important, probably worth thinking through. But then if you look at a lot of the major reports on these kinds of things, like I was looking at a big IMF study the other day, and it was claiming that 40% of jobs will be transformed globally within the next 5 or so years by AI, 60% in the rich world. And, you know, they're probably right, but what does transformed mean? And they don't specify that. And then they will say, inequality will get worse, but with good and proper management, everyone could be a winner. And they have this sort of lame line like that. But then that lame line gets echoed by various radicals who say, the problem is this a management thing. If only we could do it in the favor of workers, then everything would be happily ever after. And I think that that's pretty instrumental in its setup. And it takes this sort of double-edged sword and says, technology can be great, but it can also be bad. And it's not a very fruitful place to then start thinking about where we actually are and what this actually means in any kind of deeper way. I think to come at a more critical accounts of cybernetics and technosciences, we need to not collapse back to sort of 19th century style class structures. Today, of course, we have far greater concentrated ownership and far greater inequality that has ever existed at any point, period. The distance between, say, a Jeff Bezos and a worker in an Amazon factory is orders of magnitude greater in terms of wealth than the difference between a pharaoh and a slave. They're so much further apart now, it's not even funny. So those things are very real. Yet, I keep putting class exploitation, uberalis, over any other kind of way of looking at things actually does a bit of a disservice to getting into some of the different lines that we have running through the world today. We need a more expansive kind of historical materialism, and one that can also begin to encompass the web of life itself. Lucy mentioned that I'm just finishing up a postdoctoral research fellowship on the rather sunny question of extinction. And unfortunately, that line of work crosses over with this line of work a little more than I would like it to in a number of ways. Just one key little factoid on that kind of a line. Back in 2022, the UN released a major publication about e-waste. And in that, they concluded that just in the year 2022, there was 62 million tons of e-waste produced globally. I'm like, that's a lot. But what is 62 million tons of e-waste? To try to visualize that, just as one little slice into the sort of ecological consequences of this world that we've created, 62 million tons. It's about the same weight as about 100,000, what are they, A380 aircrafts. You know those things? They're the two-story aircrafts. They can fit 850 people in them. They're absolutely gargantuan. They're like the biggest thing we've ever made fly. Well, if you get 100,000 of them and line them up tail to nose, and form an unbroken queue from Melbourne to Nagasaki, that is the amount of e-waste as was produced in 2022 alone. This is absolutely mind-boggling. Another way to put the same statistic is if you were to get that e-waste and put it in standard garbage trucks, the amount of garbage trucks you would need would be a line, again, tail to nose, 40,000 kilometres, which is neatly the circumference of the Earth at the equator. And that's in 1 year. And that was before the AI boom, where we've had this absolutely gargantuan investment in all of this kind of stuff. It was back in 2022, NVIDIA, its market capitalization was only about 500 billion. Now it's 5 trillion. This is orders of magnitude of this sort of demented curve that we're on. Anyway, suffice to say, the habitability of our planet is in question, and this needs to be a clear focus on any kind of good critical theory, critical journalism, any kind of historical materialism worth its salt, and we have to look at what's different and what's new. And I guess to wrap up, in this world that we've created to be a kind of a laboratory, a kind of uncontrolled experiment, really, we need to look at what labor means today, what is work. And a key part of this, a key locus of power, is in this intellectual work, and to try to make sense of that. Because since it has been so closely bound up in service of the military and the market, it has remade the whole human condition in all kinds of, not just the human condition, but the entire biosphere, really. And I could provide a long, arbitrary list of different things that are reorganized by this. Basically it creates the conditions of a cut so deep into what it means to be human and what it means to live in our world today that we can only really talk about it as a transformation in being. And I think that that's a pretty crucial entry point to try to kick some of these ideas around. I guess I'll leave it there. Thank you.